Hi, my name is Michael Oberst, and that over there is Chelsea Greenwood, and we are This Is The Pits.
That thing over here is named Chelsea Greenwood. we are This Is The Pits, and we watch every Brad Pitt movie in order and review and critique it, as well as what's going on in the year it was made.
And in Brad Pitt's life, the year it was made, because Brad Pitt has a very interesting and peculiar career, and now he's a super megastar, so...
Yes, this is our first episode where he is genuinely a true full-fledged one. There's no more articles saying we don't know who he is. In fact, there's not really a lot of articles about this movie at all.
Well, it's interesting that this is probably the first movie that he is a full-fledged star, because a lot of things attribute, like A River Runs Through It and Thelma and Louise and Legends of the Fall as movies, and Seven, as movies that broke his career.
Yeah.
And so now he's like a super mega star, and he does this movie, which is an odd choice. I mean, I get why he made the choice, but it's interesting.
You know, I think it's really hard. I was doing research. It's really hard to find any interview about how he felt or his relationship with the director, who is Barry Levinson, because normally you can at least find a sound clip about him and his relationship with his director, because he's notoriously has good relationships with them. But he had nothing, and I think he was just really, I don't think he liked this role. In fact, in 2011, he said, "I think I was a disservice to this role. This is a period where I was so famous and everything was going crazy. I didn't know what I was doing, and I just took the role."
That makes sense.
Yeah.
That totally makes sense, because he probably, I mean, just knowing what I do know about Brad Pitt is he probably took this role thinking he wanted to take something meaningful. Which, you know, at a face value, this is a meaningful story.
Yeah.
Which we'll get into later. But at face value, this is a meaningful story. And Brad Pitt, you know, he always is trying to stray away from roles that are too much based on his appearance. And this movie is not at all. He wasn't shirtless once.
Not shirtless once, and not in it for very long.
No, he had a very important role. Like, his character was an important character, but he didn't do much of the heavy lifting acting.
Yeah. Let's come back to this, because I have a few theories on his role. I have mixed thoughts on his character in general.
Yeah, well, I have about 45 minutes worth of theories on this movie, so
perfect. Oh, great. I don't really have any theories, but I have a lot of commentary.
I mostly just meant I'm going to talk about this movie for the next 45 minutes.
Great. That's what we're here for, baby.
Yeah,
welcome
to
the show.
Anyway, so before we get into it, how was your week, Chelsea Greenwood?
Oh my gosh, my week has been really wild and crazy. I'm in Los Angeles. We're together. Have we told the audience
yet? No, I don't think we've said we're together in person right now.
Yeah.
And
we're in the same room, and it's wild and crazy and cool.
Yeah, this is our kitchen.
Yes, we're in our mutual house.
Yeah.
let's see. So I flew to LA on Halloween. We had Halloween, which was wild and crazy, and you came to it. I've now said wild and crazy 4 times, including that one, since we started this podcast. I went to the Joshua Tree this weekend, which was wonderful. I almost said wild and crazy. I almost said it.
You almost said it unironically, too.
Yeah, I know. It's wild and crazy.
I just want to point out to our audience that I went to Chelsea's house for Halloween, and...
the house I grew up in.
The house you grew up in. House you were born in.
Yeah, actually physically born in. That's a story for another podcast.
A whole podcast about that one night. That blessed night. And Chelsea hands out candy more aggressively than I've ever seen anyone.
What are you trying to tell me? How so?
I just mean every, like, those kids would come up and you were like, "Hey, how old are you?"
Well, they need to work for it. In fact, Halloween is such a stupid holiday. I mean, it's not stupid, but think about it. Like, it's one night of the year where children are going around and getting free drugs, basically, from every house on the block. And if they're going to be hopped up on sugar for the next, whatever, week or 2 weeks, they need to work for it. My favorite thing was asking them which, like, pop star they preferred and, like, trying to get on their level as a teen.
Oh, yeah. And it fully would throw them off. Except for when you ask them, like, you're like, Nicki Minaj or Drake or something like that. And they're like, what?
Or why Cardi.
No, but you said, at one point you said Drake, and they were like, because we were asking Nicki or Cardi.
Yeah.
But then we switched it up, and they were so confused.
I was surprised by the majority vote, which was Nicki. I am a full-on Cardi fan.
I was a big Cardi fan when she was on Love & Hip Hop, and then she got so famous that she got kind of weird.
But yeah, I don't really like Nicki Minaj.
The weirder, the better. Nicki Minaj. I actually turned down a Nicki Minaj music video today.
So did I. Because then you tried to pawn it off on me, and I also said no.
Well, good thing for that. So yeah, so we're sitting together. We had Thanksgiving, and by Thanksgiving, I mean Halloween. We
Another quick note about Halloween.
Oh, okay.
It's weird when... I got more on that.
Yeah, please.
It's weird when you think about how all year round, we tell children not to take candy from strangers.
Yep.
Except for one night a year.
It's like
get
the purge.
As much candy as possible. It's the purge. It's the candy purge for children.
It's really crazy. I used to really love Halloween. This year was fun, though, because I live in the house where they literally bus kids in from all over the city. And so it's like nonstop kids on kids on kids on kids.
Yeah.
And I like to torture children. Psychologically torture children. Ooh, that's a nice segue into this movie, torturing children.
Speaking of torturing children.
Let's not get there quite yet. I'm in a good mood still. This was... It was very heavy. I did not expect it to be so heavy.
Me neither. This is a real downer.
Yeah, a real thinker.
Speaking of downers, I voted today.
Oh, okay. I think that's an upper.
It's an upper. It's just a downer that like I have to like put in some... I mean, okay, that sounds bad.
It's a thrill to engage in democracy.
Well, this lady, it was funny because I was like, as I was voting... I mean, some bullshit with changing my address when I moved. Like, I had to get a provisional ballot. Which
I also provisioned.
Whatever. Still counts. It's just, you know, it's extra steps. I was, like, just, like, asking this lady, like, okay, so do I do this? And then I, like, would try to, like, skip steps or whatever. And she was like, oh, no, you have to go back and you have to go slower. And I was like, you know, and she's like, but that's okay. You know, I just know that you're excited to vote. I was
yeah. Like, well,
yeah, it's kind of it. I'm excited to leave. I'm excited to be done voting. And it was a shit show.
Waited in a line, right?
It was a line. I mean, it was... Yeah. I mean, a lot of people were there.
Yeah. One room of voting?
One room.
Yeah.
Well, but it was a big... It was like a gym.
Yeah.
It was huge. And there was still lined outside around the block. Like, it was crazy.
And so she was like, you're excited to vote. And I was like, I'm excited to be done.
Did you say that to her?
No, I didn't say it. She was so...
Wow. Annoying. I feel the opposite. I was having a real moment where I was like, this is pretty amazing that this is the midterm elections and it's just a huge deal. And also, like, so much is at stake. And I was having flashbacks to the 2016 election. I was like, as I was voting, like, Dianne Feinstein. I was like, I had a little prickle of tear in my eye because I said, I don't know. I find it thrilling.
Did you have that little pusher?
Oh, so fun.
I love that. I've never done it that way before.
Oh my goodness. Yeah, it's a delight.
It was a delight, yeah. The guy behind me in line brought his kid with him, and the kid was like, Dad, this is boring. And he's like, yeah, well, it's not the most exciting thing you'll ever do, but it is one of the most important things you'll ever do.
Bravo!
And I was like, okay, Dad.
That is what, like, a dad should
say. I know.
Daddy.
And the kid, like, you know, in one ear, out the other, he was like, yeah, cool. Can I sit down?
I mean, like, yeah, I didn't really care one way or the other about voting until... Well, I guess the first time I could vote was George Bush. And then it was fucking Barack Obama. And it was like, walking into that polling place when Barack Obama was up for election was like electric, right?
Yeah.
Like stamping his name. Ooh.
Yeah, it's true. FPCs. I felt the same way. Voting for Obama was like...
Ooh, felt good. It was so cool to vote for Obama, too. Do you remember, like...
Of course.
Like, I mean, I was in high school when the first time he was elected, and everyone had those shirts, and, like, they had the glasses with his face on them.
Oh, my God.
And, like, it was like, the coolest thing ever to vote for Obama.
I think... I was in Manhattan. I was living in Manhattan. I think, to this day, that might have been the best night of my life. It was... insanity. I was living on 7th Street. There was a pop-up rave on 8th Street. Everybody was just like running down the streets, making out. There was music out of every car that could, and they all synchronized it to the same radio station. And I was like walking block by block, singing the national anthem at the top of my lungs. Like, I don't think I went to sleep until like 6 a.m. that night.
Whoa,
just like on a high from Barack Obama. Like, the whole city was pulsing.
Was it like that when Osama bin Laden died?
No, when Osama bin Laden died, I'll never forget that, actually, because that's when I was interviewing for college. I just happened to be there that weekend, but I was living in L.A., and it was a very snowy day. It was, like, pouring snow. Oh, when he died, this is when I captured him.
What were you talking about?
When I got captured.
No, when no. they killed Osama bin Laden.
I was thinking of Saddam Hussein.
Saddam Hussein was less exciting, or at least for me, because I was really young when that happened. That was like 2003 or something.
I don't remember when they killed Osama bin Laden.
Really? I remember distinctly because everybody lost their... It felt like we won. It felt like the war was over. It felt like we won. People were driving around, fireworks. People were
where?
In San Francisco.
I think I was in San Francisco when this happened.
It was 2012.
Yeah, I was in San Francisco.
Yeah, I just remember people driving around, like, guns shooting, fireworks. We were, like, that was a night that I didn't go to bed till like, 3 or 4 in the morning. Like, we were just, that's everyone was so partying funny. So hard.
I don't remember that, but I do have an amazing story about the time I met the guy who killed Osama bin Laden in SEAL Team 6.
What? Oh, I read a book by those guys.
Let me tell you a little story. I hope that there's a listener who's gotten this far in the podcast, because this is probably the best story that I have. And my claim
better
to
than
fame.
The vampire? The...
Different. So I was backstage at a Foo Fighters concert at Madison Square Garden. Okay. At this bar.
Okay.
That Madison Square Garden hosts, whatever, for the bands. And I start talking to these guys, and it comes out that they're SEAL Team 6, and I am wasted. I have just done a beer bong with Dave Grohl. Name drop. And
it's okay, something fell.
I had just done a beer bong with Dave Grohl, and Dave goes, "This is the guy, blah blah blah, forget his name, he's the guy who killed Osama bin Laden." And I look at him drunk off my tits, and I say, "You're a real one-hit wonder, ain't you?" And I turn and walk away, and it was my proudest moment of all.
That's the best joke I ever made.
Fully off the cuff, drunken Chelsea is at her finest and wittiest.
You probably walked away the way that Obama walked away from the podium after he said, "We got him." And then he turned around and walked away from the podium. And do you remember when he did that? Like, his dick was swinging so low. Like, he's never swung dick harder.
Oh, sometimes when I'm feeling sad, I'll just look at pictures of Michelle and Barack Obama.
Oh, same. I just tweeted the other day a little video of Obama.
I saw that.
Saying hello to a child dressed as Superman, and it just made me so warm in my heart.
Yeah, he was a good guy. Remember when we had a good guy in office? Probably the best guy.
Probably the best guy. But yeah. I'm not saying he was the perfect president. I realize he was a pretty conservative Democrat. Who cares?
Also, no politician is ever going to be what you want. Politics is innately corrupt and fucked, and you're the kind of person that wants to get to the top of the game. Like, who wants to be a politician?
Who wants to be the president? Ugh. Honestly, Trump didn't. Trump.
We're going far.
Oh no! Oh,
but
no.
Let me just reel it back into the. I'm going to go and rewind to when you said you tweeted something, and that reminds me that we still only have 3 Twitter followers: you, me, and Brad Pitt. So why don't you guys follow us?
Yeah, follow us on Twitter and on Instagram. I mean, our Instagram's heating up,
which is good.
But follow it. I mean, some of you gotta be listening and not following. I mean, from all of our 4 follow listeners,
yeah.
Do all 4 of you listen? Mom, are you?
My
following?
Mom and dad definitely listen.
Is your mom following? Yeah, she is.
I have a few friends who have texted me that they have listened, but people are listening to movies that they like, which is fine. But we really do want you to join our whole journey if you can.
In other words, Sleepers is not one of the ones that's going to be more popular, but it's okay because it's part of the journey.
Yeah.
And if you are on this journey with us, then you're probably ready to start talking about Sleepers.
Yeah, I think it's time. So let's start with 1996. This is our Brad Pitt's only movie in 1996.
Yeah, well, he was so famous he didn't know what to do with himself.
I think he was kind of losing his mind.
This role.
Okay, so it's 1996. It's the only movie that Brad Pitt makes in this year. Now, here's a few interesting statements. Because he was doing 2 or 3 movies a year. And then after this movie, he does 2 or 3 movies a year. But I listened to an interview with Gwyneth Paltrow, his girlfriend at the time. Mm-hmm. And she said, the way that we keep our romance going is that we don't do movies at the same time. Because we're both under so much stress. So that could be a reason why.
Juliette Lewis said the same thing.
Yeah, he must have a rule.
He must have a rule.
Yeah. And she was filming the movie Emma. So I think she gave him the space. Also, did you notice that it's really hard to find any quotes on this movie from anybody? Director?
Yeah, nobody's talking about it.
Any of the actors?
Is it because the controversy surrounding it and like how true it is?
I think so. Like, maybe, but yeah, I think so. And we'll get there. But I think I don't think that they wanted to talk about it because the conversation became so much less about the movie and more about what it was based on, which we'll get to. But Brad, the one quote I did find was Brad said, I think I did a disservice to this role. This was a period where I was launched into stardom and I didn't know what I wanted to do. Mm-hmm. And so I just took this role because it was handed to me because I thought it was going to be something. But like, he didn't like this role at all. He won't talk about it after that. So
yeah, I mean, it's interesting, but it's also not surprising because you look at the like headlines of this movie and like see who's in it. Yeah. It's crazy. Yeah. I mean, Kevin Bacon, Brad Pitt,
Robert De Niro,
Dustin Hoffman. It's an
all-star cast.
Cause I hadn't really heard about this movie before.
I had heard of it because this is another name drop, but my parents were really good friends with Barry and Diana Levinson growing up. And then my mom always talks about, and so I was wondering, I mean, they lost touch.
You were at least peripherally aware.
But I remember like playing with their kids when we were, like they were really good family friends of ours. And I remember being at the Oscars. I don't remember when he won an Oscar for, but Barry Levinson won a Best Director or Best Movie of the Year Oscar. Maybe it was for Wag the Dog. And Dad always talks about, I remember when our family friend looked at us as we were watching him accept his Oscar and said, "We've lost him." Like, now he's...
We've lost him.
Like, he's not going to be...
Well, there goes Barry. Around.
But anyway, I only knew about Sleepers because any Barry Levinson movie is, like, on the family radar.
Right. Okay, well, that's fair. But yeah. I mean...
I wouldn't have heard of it otherwise. So it's interesting because I've been telling people all week, like, "Hey, want to watch Sleepers with me? Hey, want to watch Sleepers with me?" And they're like, "What the fuck is Sleepers?"
Yeah. And you're like, "Oh, it's that movie with Brad Pitt, Robert De Niro, Dustin Hoffman, and Kevin Bacon." And it's like...
And John Williams score.
It's like, Barry Levinson directs and they're like, "Who the fuck?"
Yeah.
Like, what?
It just got lost to the sands of time because it was swallowed by controversy. So
we should explain the controversy since that's what follows the movie forever.
Yeah. I just want to set up 1996 one last time, just to give context for where the movie came from. So the best year, the movie that won the Oscar.
Sorry. Rain Man was his movie that he probably won everything for.
Fuck yeah. Great film. Dustin Hoffman, Tom Cruise.
But that was 1988, so it might have been Wag the Dog that... Whatever, sorry, go on.
Whatever. He won an Oscar, and we lost him forever. I actually emailed his wife to see if he'd want to come on this podcast in a desperate attempt at publicity, but she never got back to me. So...
It's because you lost Barry.
We lost Barry to the Oscars, to fame and glitz. Anyway, the movie that won the best movie Oscar this year was The English Patient. Mm. The number one song was "Don't Speak" by No Doubt.
I know Love just that
what
song.
You're thinking. I don't need your reason. Anyway, other movies that were out that year were Independence Day, Twister, and Mission Impossible 1. So, big deal.
Yeah.
The biggest toy was Tickle Me Elmo. That was a huge fucking thing. Do you remember that?
No.
I remember it. It was all over the news. Whatever. Yankees won the World Series. This was a funny fact. Tom Cruise was yachting in the ocean when he spotted another yacht on fire and he saved the whole crew and family. Like a real live Mission Impossible.
Real life Mission Impossible.
Only two more things. Scream came out. The movie The Rock came out. And here's something I think you'd appreciate. Did you ever see the movie Space Jam?
Yeah.
So I found out that the Space Jam website was launched that year. And if you go to spacejam.com, it's the same website as it was in 1996. And it is a delight and a dream to go through.
That's amazing. I'm going to do it right now.
Yes, listeners, take a break to go to the spacejam.com website.
It's the same. Yeah.
I know. So cool.
The lineup. You can see the lineup in the locker room. It's such a pointless website.
It's a 96 website.
Yeah, I remember in 1996 when websites were... There's like no ads. There's nothing to buy. It's just like...
Did you have website making class?
No.
Oh, we did. It wasn't like coding. It was like website making class.
like word art?
Yeah. Anyway, okay. Let's get to Sleepers.
Okay, so one thing I should also point out is that for some of these actors, what they were doing at the time, I mean... So Barry Levinson had worked with Dustin Hoffman before, obviously, in 1988, they did Rain Man.
Yeah, so Barry Levinson was a hotshot, big shot director.
He was. At this point, he had won Best Director. So he's a hotshot director. De Niro had just come off Heat and Casino. Literally, the two movies right before this were Heat and Casino.
Yeah.
And I love Casino. It's like
I've never seen it.
Chelsea. You like gambling.
I love gambling.
Casino. It's so
good. Okay, great. He also did much earlier, but he did Deer Hunter, which is like, fuck. He's a real, true, amazing actor, and he killed it in this role. Mm-hmm.
And I think wasn't Goodfellas early? Well, he was definitely in Raging Bull. That was the 80s.
He was huge. Basically, he was a well-respected and huge actor at that point, and continues to be. It's really remarkable. Maybe our next podcast.
We always say that about every single other actor.
Yeah, but he does have a really long-lasting career.
He does, and I did look at his IMDb, and he has over 100 movie credits. Yeah,
so
he has a robust career as well.
Great.
Maybe
our whole thing will just be watching long-careered actors.
We're going to be doing this till we're old.
Yeah, but hopefully we'll get advertisements and followers and fans that pay us millions of dollars to do this.
Yerba Mate, LaCroix, I mean, whoever, beverages, companies.
I like wine.
Wine, alcohol companies too. I mean, we're not opposed.
I'm drinking a can of wine right now. It's quite delectable. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon. Okay, so this movie is based on a...
Oh, we should mention the controversy. So, okay.
Yeah, so go ahead. No, you go. I'll set it up and you flesh it out.
All right, you put them up and unlock them down.
Yeah, I'll pitch the ball. You hit it out of the park.
Deal.
So this movie is based on a
book,
a true nonfiction book by Lorenzo Carcaterra, in which he speculates. No, he doesn't speculate. He claims that he was sent to an all boys prison, like juvenile detention center when he was a kid, and the wardens beat, raped, and abused them like crazy. And he wrote it really, really beautiful. He was written up on all the papers and the Catholic Church and all these things came to be. But then when people started doing research on it, they found no fact or like no court records.
Yeah, he said that he changed a few things to protect the identities. And then people started researching and they're like, okay, well, what was true? Because nothing resembling this has happened.
The court case. Yeah.
People thought that, like, they were just basically saying either you're not, like, something's not clear or, like, it just didn't happen because there's nothing resembling. And then he wouldn't respond.
Yeah.
When people would call him out for it, he wouldn't respond.
It's interesting. Which is also suspicious. It's suspicious because you want to believe him because you want to expose this horrible place, which I guess we should just go through the story
of the movie, which is. Yeah, we should skim through because it's. Honestly, it's a long movie.
Yeah.
But there's not a whole bunch of story.
No, it's very easy to synopsize. Synopsis?
Summarize? I'm going to say summarize.
Yeah, okay, well, don't make me feel dumb and stupid when I say synopsize. Synopsize? Synopse.
All right.
Summarize the movie, please.
Let me synopsize this bee.
You know, it starts off very, like, mean streets where they're just,
cute.
So cute. These kids are just, like, the little rascals.
Four little chickens in Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan.
Yeah. I wonder if you can hear the wonderful bells in the background.
Should we close the door?
No, it's soothing.
Okay. Wind chimes. We're in lovely Los Angeles. It's November 6th, and it's 85 degrees.
It's a warm day. Yeah, it's a lovely warm day. There's a slight breeze. It's great. Anyway.
So there's four chickens.
Four chickens, all in the Bronx.
No, Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan.
Hell's Kitchen, Manhattan, and proud of it.
And they are little hood rat hooligan scallywags.
Yeah, they're very like Jersey boys. Like,
yeah,
it's great.
Cute. It's 1961?
Six.
They steal a hot dog and then accidentally steal the cart and then accidentally push the cart down some stairs and then the hot dog cart... Some stairs that leading down to the subway, yeah. And then as the hot dog cart is going down the stairs, a guy walks in front and he gets smashed by the hot dog cart. He does not die, but he is in critical condition and he does press charges on those kids. Those four little chickens are sentenced to go to a correctional facility. And they do. They go. You know, they're scared. They have... I should also mention that they have a good relationship with the local pastor.
Priest. Pastor is not a Catholic term.
Oh, sorry. The priest. Oh, thank you.
You're welcome. Isn't that interesting? I was a religious studies major.
Yeah, it is interesting, especially because I was Catholic for a period and I didn't know that.
Did you have a pastor?
I guess I didn't. Father. They would say father.
Priest, yeah.
Anyway, because I was also just regular Christian, like not fundamentalist.
You were both Christians. I was wondering if you wanted to talk about that.
Yeah, well, I mean, I didn't get raped or anything, so.
No, I know, but just religion. There's two things you don't talk about: politics and religion.
And we've so talked far about politics. We so gotta why do not?
Well, so yeah, they're really close with ex-mob boss who has now become a priest, and he's a really good guy, and he's really close and protective with these kids who all kind of come from abusive family members and are all kind of poor in this just ghetto area.
Hard lives.
Yeah, it's a hard knock life.
It's a hard knock life for kids. I mean, it's like. The whole thing is like it's Hell's Kitchen and everybody's mean, but everybody looks out for each other. We're mean to each other, but outsiders, we protect each other from outsiders.
Yeah.
And it's got that very, you know, kind of stereotypical like Hollywood depiction of like Italian Americans in the 60s in Hell's Kitchen. And it's
it was so fun to watch too because New York in the 60s, so the movie goes through from the late 60s to the early 80s and like New York was a fucking hellscape, no man's land. Anything goes, wild and crazy. Like, okay, well, we'll get there. Like, the guys came in and just shot people just walking around shooting people.
And then they just walked out and they're like, should have ordered the sandwiches to go.
Yeah. Oy vey, manishka.
But anyway, so, and by the way, this father, this priest, who is their friend, is played by Robert De Niro.
And he is such a good actor. It's crazy.
Played so well by Robert De Niro. Like,
I even wrote down, like, he is so good for this role. Like, I'm so scared of him, but in, like, a please protect me way.
I'm scared of him because you can see, it's almost like he's internalized. Like, it's like you, I mean, he's an actor. I genuinely believed him and who his character was. I saw his bad past. I saw the care and love he felt for these kids and all in his eyes. Like, the way he communicated with these kids, it was,
he's got that twinkle in his eye.
He's my favorite part of the movie, I think.
I also really love Dustin Hoffman, which we'll get to.
You know what? Let's not just get there because I just want to say off the bat, Dustin Hoffman, Robert De Niro, Kevin Bacon, and the four kids were the best.
Amazing.
Like, the kids were so good. They kept their, like, they had those accents. They kept them going. One of them looked like you.
Which one?
I wrote it down. Michael kind of looks like the one, like one of the kids, excla, excla.
Okay.
Didn't say which one it was. The one who draws. The one who, whatever.
I get it. I look like a child with a mustache.
Well, you are a child with a mustache. anyway, so the kids accidentally put this guy in a coma, but it was all in fun.
It was an accident. It was an honest accident.
And it was the day that would change their life forever. And they got sent to... Discretional facility for kids.
For boys. And it's run by, or well, the guy who is the warden on their floor, the guard, the head guard of their the floor that they live on.
Noakes,
his name is, played by Kevin Bacon. And he immediately is abusive as fuck to them.
Ugh.
Just right off the bat, like, he's so abusive. He's just mean. And
but he is so fucking good at being mean.
I mean, can you believe he like, I also realized I haven't seen like any of the movies Kevin Bacon's famous for. I never saw Footloose.
I know. No, I'm not surprised because you've never seen anything good.
Just wait till we get to the more modern movies and I'm going to, they roll.
I know. How old are you in 96?
I was 3 years old.
Yeah. So suck my face. he's really, really awful to them, and...
Well, I always think that Kevin Bacon has kind of a punchable face. He's got a rat face.
Yeah, he for sure does. And that's where the thing is, like, I respect him for taking this role. This is a hard role to take. A kid who fucking rapes children.
Yeah.
And, like, the minute we meet him, we know the minute he walks in. And, like, I didn't know anything about this movie. I didn't know what it was about, did you?
I only saw like a one line description where that says that they were abused. And so I knew that abuse was coming, but I didn't know where. I honestly thought for a second that it was going to be De Niro because of the Catholic Church thing.
Totally. Me too.
And I was like, oh no, like I love how good he is in this movie. I hope he doesn't turn out to be a bad guy.
And I love that they did that because I think that was intentional.
I don't think it was. I think I guess it was because it came out in the 1990s. It came out in 1990 after like all that stuff had started.
Yeah.
Like the 90s, you know, because like the exposure for the church happened in 1992 or 91. I think it was 92 or 91. I'm saying that only based on the movie Spotlight.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I was expecting that too, and I didn't want it. I had the same reaction. I was like, no, you're the best.
So anyway, Kevin Bacon is good at being the worst.
The minute he walks in, he tells the guy, the kid that looks like you. Oh, no. He tells the main character's kid version of the main character just to take off his pants.
No, it's all this close. Strip
Take off
down.
all his clothes, and then he goes, "Now what do you want me to do?" And he goes, "Put your
Get
clothes back
dressed."
on."
Yeah.
Ugh.
It's good. It's like instantly
And then it
power
just gets worse and
play.
worse, until you're watching them get raped by not just him, but the whole system, except for the one good guy in the lunchroom, who is played by Chief Richard Weber from Grey's Anatomy. I died. I thought he was going to come back because he was the only one to ever protect them in prison.
There was a few actors who were big actors who had small cameos.
Well, it was Billy Crudup's first role, and let me tell you, he's the most sexual of my
Who's
sexual.
Billy? Who's that?
He
Is
plays
that?
one of the shooters, the one with the long hair.
Oh, yeah, he's very sexual.
Sexual to my sexual.
Yeah.
Pen, pen, pen.
And there's also Janice from The Sopranos. Do you watch The Sopranos? I forget.
I haven't seen it.
Oh, I was just watching it before you got here. I am obsessed with The Sopranos.
Yeah.
It's always on repeat. Like, I've watched it
Yeah, I
through
have
several times.
intentions of watching it, and I just never get around to it.
You definitely should. It's really good. But anyway, Janice is the lady in the booth. The woman.
Oh,
She
wow.
plays Tony Soprano's sister, and she is so fucking good in The Sopranos. It's insane. She's so hateable. But like, you love to hate her. You know,
I
she's
love
like this
that.
crazy, wacky
I
woman.
love that, love that.
Anyway, so she's there. And then also, did you watch The Wire?
Fuck yeah, I watched The Wire.
You saw Bunk then.
Hundo P.
I love Bunk.
I
I have such a crush on
know.
Bunk.
Sexual into my
Yeah,
nextual.
he looked young and just, he looked good.
Vibrant.
Yeah, vibrant. His skin was just supple.
Glowing.
He was glowing.
So basically, the kids go to prison. I should also mention that their first job ever was working for a big mob boss whose name was
Big, like Fat Benny or something like that.
King Benny.
King Benny.
And he's like a traditional Italian guy. And so, okay, so they go to prison, they get raped, raped, raped. They're only there for one of them. The one kid is there for 6 months, the other three are there for a year.
Was not prepared for the amount of child rape that we saw.
No, it was a lot. And
A
I
lot.
came home. I watched this movie around this time yesterday, 3 in the afternoon. I had just come back from a trip to Joshua Tree. I was exhausted. I'm like lying. I don't know what I thought. I think I thought it was going to be like a psychological thriller,
I thought it
like
was going to be more of a
a
mob
la
movie.
Seven. I didn't think it was going to be. I don't know what the fuck I thought it was going to be. Basically,
I mean, you can't. The name Sleepers, you would not be able to
no.
guess.
And I didn't want. And I purposely didn't want to know because I have a rhythm of how we do this. And I was like, I
Same.
literally don't want to know anything at all.
Yeah.
So I'm like lying there, hungover. I woke up at 5 in the morning that day to look at the sunrise in the desert. The desert is just sucks your soul away in the best way. And then I'm like, oh my God, like. And those kids are such good actors. You could see their dignity taken from their eyes. Like, it's amazing how good they were. But anyway, they get
Yeah.
raped, raped, raped. It's a nightmare hellscape. It's the worst place you could possibly be.
Hate that you keep saying rape, rape, raped. They get rape, rape, raped.
Well, there's four of them. They get rape, 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 raped.
Rape, 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 raped. Yeah.
Yeah, rape, rape, rape.
Let's
This
stop
is
saying this
not
word so
good.
much. It's very
I was worried this
uncomfortable.
morning because I'm in a great mood and we're in the same place, and it's like I was like, "How this is so dark and I'm gonna be having fun." So,
Imagine someone listening to this in their car and they just hear us keep saying rape,
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 rape.
rape. Shit. Okay, not great, Bob. Not great. Anyway, they get out. Cut to 1981.
80.
10 years later.
Yeah, whatever.
You take it away.
So it's 10 years later. They
Two of the
are.
kids walk into the bar.
Two of the kids are in a bar.
But they're not kids anymore. They're 28
They're
years old.
adults. Yep, they're adults, and they are just bad news bears. You see them, and you just don't. You know that they've had rough and tough lives. Oh, we didn't even talk about how this movie has narration throughout the whole thing.
I
Another
know.
90s movie with
I'm
narration.
not wild about it. The narration combined with the John Williams score is like. I'm glad
I
we
have
put that
some
to
opinions
bed.
about the pacing and the editing of this movie. It's
Yeah,
too slow. The
absolutely.
narration wasn't needed. They just needed to cut to the chase more and a little less kid raping because
We get the picture. We don't need to see
you
the
could have
picture.
told it without showing it.
It seemed like that was like a ploy it was like a this thing. One's gonna get an Oscar. It's like when you show right, a fucking like gas Oscar chamber, bait. You're gonna get an Oscar no matter what.
Right, like it was 90s Oscar bait. Yeah. Oh my god, it was totally Oscar bait. Now that I think about it, like it's not Oscar bait watching it now. Like you wouldn't think this is an Oscar movie.
No, but when you think about
the cast, when you think about the director, and you think about the year.
And the music. That was John Williams. It was like, I mean,
it was Oscar bait. Yeah. But it was not done well because it was too boring and too slow.
2.5 hours long. That's the thing. I like the story. I like, regardless of whether or not it's true. Yeah. It made the movie just okay. But we'll get there. Anyway.
Anyway, so yeah. So these two guys, Bad News Bears, they're in this bar. They've obviously had a hard life. The narration is telling us that they've had a hard life. These two guys down the bar, I thought this was random and kind of funny. I thought it was going to come into play later.
I wanted it to.
Me too. So these guys down the bar are talking about Republican politics.
Stuff. And they're Republicans.
Like, yeah. He said something like that. And he's like, "What? So what are they talking about?" He's like, "Oh, they're talking about Reagan's speech." And he's like, "Hey, buy those guys a drink and tell them to change the subject." Anyway, so they buy him a drink and they stop talking about politics.
Yeah, and they were Democrats, even though they were like gangbangers. Who even knew they cared about politics at all?
I think everyone just hated Reagan in the 80s, all Democrats at least. Yeah. So then they realize that the old guard who was their rapist was sitting in the back eating a steak or some meatloaf.
Mm-hmm.
And so they look back there and they decide they're going to kill him. So they go, they walk back there and they have a brief confrontation with him and then they kill him.
And they shoot him in the dick first.
Mm-hmm. Which I just wanted them to leave them.
Me too. I didn't want them to kill him at all.
I didn't either. Okay, I'm so glad you said that because I wanted him to suffer more.
Yeah, like they did. And it would have been better if he did. There was a couple moments like that where I was like, no, I don't want it this way. If he had lived without a dick and just tortured by the fact that he had to face his actions, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah.
But instead he died. Like, who cares? He was a miserable piece of shit anyway.
Yeah. It's disappointing. I didn't want him to die. I wanted him to hurt more.
Yeah.
They should have just shot him in the dick and let him bleed out.
Shot him in the dick, let him bleed out and torture him. Be like, do you remember us? Like, you did this to us. Hey, everybody in this bar, this guy's a fucking child rapist. Like,
well,
vindication would have been so satisfying. The movie could have ended there if he had had some reciprocity for what he had done. But then the movie goes on and we meet Brad Pitt.
I know. Okay, so like, what, like 45 minutes into the movie?
More.
No Brad Pitt.
An hour at least.
I even wrote down, where's Brad Pitt? Is he even in this movie?
Yeah.
Finally, he shows up with a whisper. And I'm like, oh, okay, I guess there's Brad Pitt.
Okay, Brad Pitt in this movie, his character is complex. He has a main role. So basically, the kids come out, they kill him. They're 28 years old. They go to jail.
The movie then becomes about a trial where they hatch a scheme to get these two guys off from the murder. Like,
yes.
Like, not guilty, not in jail for this murder.
Using the mob that they grew up with and
pulling all the strings.
Yeah, and Brad Pitt, who plays the older Michael.
One of the other kids.
The kind of the kid that was... He was a little bit more rebellious. He was a little bit more... He had a girlfriend.
Yeah.
He was, like, kind of a little bit more grown up than the kids, I thought. Like, he was meant to be
a little more clinical and...
A little bit more serious.
Yeah.
And he... So he basically takes the case that's as the prosecutor for his best friends that he grew up with so that he can rig the case so that they can get off.
Right. And so that's what the whole movie becomes about, which I kind of get, like, it's kind of cool. I don't know.
It is cool. I mean, it's cool. I think it's another one of those cases where it's hard to judge now because it's so analog the way that it all goes down and it's so 90s and it is so Oscar baity that it's like, it wasn't seamless. It wasn't like, whoa. Like, we just got duped.
It was like, okay,
we know what's happening and it's clunking. This whole thing is clunking. Like, mm-hmm. nothing was a surprise because they had narration. They knew the whole thing. Basically, Brad Pitt hires Dustin Hoffman to be a lawyer who's a drunk who will literally just follow a script that he's written.
Who, by the way, he looks like Ben Franklin.
Yeah, that hair.
He looked like Ben Franklin. Look, those glasses.
In fact, the hair in this whole movie is a nightmare.
Everyone's hair.
Brad Pitt's dye job is awful. Like, it looks...
His hair is just plain. It's very 90s
Who
Brad.
Who cares about the cut? Because whatever, it's 90s Brad, but it's like auburn-y brown. It just wasn't good.
His suits weren't that good.
No, it was bad. Did you notice that? They just shot their wad on big names and big talent.
They spent all their money on big names and big talent. Because this was a $33 million budget. It's not that big for how much talent they have.
No,
the budget
Oscar
is not that big.
It's like, we'll pay you less than you normally get because you'll probably win an Oscar for this role because it's about kid rape.
And then nobody did.
And then nobody did. And nobody deserved to. Poor Barry.
If anything, I think De Niro could have got a best supporting nod, at least a nomination.
Yeah. So the big ethos, the big heart chunk of the movie is that the key to winning this case for the prosecution, I mean, for the defendants, is if the priest, good old Robert De Niro, lies under oath when he puts his hand on the Bible and says the kids didn't kill this guy because
they were at a Knicks game.
Because they were all at a Knicks game together and they have an alibi. Mm-hmm. So we find out earlier in the movie that Robert De Niro's character has also been to the same academy and knows what's going on there. And basically
He has?
Yeah.
Wait, what?
I didn't catch that.
Yeah, he said to them, when he came to visit the kid at the hospital, at the place, he said, I went here as a kid, so I know what's going on. Tell me if you have anything going on.
Oh, I didn't know that.
So Robert De Niro knows intimately what's going on there, even though it's probably a very different staff. The story does not check out. But he... Basically, the whole thing is like, is it worse? Is murder worse than raping than like...
No, well, that's what Roger Ebert's whole thing.
Okay, I'm so glad you brought that up. Fucking Roger Ebert.
So Roger Ebert, for those who haven't studied this movie extensively...
This is so problematic for me.
Me too. Roger Ebert did not like this movie because he said it was homophobic.
Fuck you, Roger Ebert.
He was wrong. I think he was very, very wrong.
Oh, the nerve of calling... That's basically saying gay people are...
Kid fuckers.
Yeah, are pedophiles.
Yeah, no, he doesn't realize he's doing... He's trying... I think he's trying to do the right thing. He thinks he's doing the right thing.
I got news for you. I'm learning more and more. Like, Siskel and Ebert were the names, like, the only names I have ever heard of movie reviewers growing up. And every review I read of his for almost every movie I'm watched, I'm like, quit fucking blowing smoke up everybody's asses and using these big twirly words and like trying to make points. Like, you suck and you have no taste. But the point is, the whole thing was the ethos of, or like the point we're supposed to like really bite into the sandwich of this movie is like, oh my God, this priest has now lied and he's such a good guy and he's such a pure heart, but he has lied under oath to protect murderers who are not good guys. They're like, they're killers.
They've been to jail for murder before.
Yes, they've been to jail for murder before. They die. We find out later that they die because they're in gangs. Like, they're not good guys.
No.
And he sets them free by lying under oath. And that's the sort of question we're meant to grapple with, I think.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
That's supposed to be the moral question. But I think, you know, the way they set it up, though, is so... The way Dustin Hoffman... I just loved Dustin Hoffman so much in this. I thought he was so good.
He plays drunk great. He plays hardcore great.
He was drunk and the way he wasn't looking at people in the eyes.
Can I name drop one more time?
Yes, please do. I mean, at this point,
I'm in LA, so I feel like I need to. Yeah. But my very first job when I moved to LA after college was as Dustin Hoffman's personal assistant during the holidays. And I was his little elf. And... I wasn't his little elf.
That's
mean,
a weird thing to say. Did he make you dress up?
He refers to us as...
Where's my little elf?
No. But he was so lovely and just a little old Jewish man. I think he was like 74 when I was working for him and just funny and wonderful. And
oh, that's lovely.
Yeah, I loved him. He got fucking Me Too'd this year and it was a bummer because it was a bummer. But anyway, he's really great and I loved seeing him and I'm glad we get to talk about him on this podcast. And I'm sorry for name dropping number three.
Dustin, if you're listening, Chelsea misses you. She loves you. She's not going to Me Too you.
I'll never Me Too you, but you can Me Too me.
Okay. All right. All right. Pull it back. So I thought he was, I thought he was amazing, but...
Wait, yeah, let's just finish. So the,
what I was saying is they were setting it up, like with the way they acted and the way they told the story was they were setting it up to be, for that to be like a big gag, like a big shocker.
Yeah.
Like, whoa, whoa, whoa.
And yeah.
Like, I just didn't feel that. I was like, of course he's going to do it.
Yeah. Of course he's going to do it. I mean, hello, of course. They get off, Brad Pitt.
If this movie ended any way other than them getting free, the whole movie wouldn't make sense.
That's the thing. And that's why it would have made sense if the rapist lived and then that story played out and then they went to prison for shooting a guy. I don't know. But then they went to prison because they like fought for what they believed in. It just like, I don't know. It kind of falls apart as a viewer, I think. But it's also implied. So basically they win. They get off.
Yeah.
We find out 2 seconds later that they die a year later before they're 29. They don't even make it a year.
Yeah.
And Brad Pitt, it's implied that the whole reason he went into law was to basically vindicate the kids. And they slowly kill all the other guys or implicate the other guys who had raped them. There was 4 or 5 of them.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this whole like backdoor mob situation. And there's like secret notes passed and like newspapers with words written on it. It's like, this is not fucking necessary. I get what they were trying to do. Like, this is cool and look at us.
It's like mobby. Like, I think they were sort of playing into the mobster thing.
But it's like, pick your fucking story.
Yeah.
Is it a mob story or is it a revenge story? And then that's the other thing.
Or is it
a
court drama?
It's like, or is it a story about religion? Or it's just like, it was too many things, but I have to say that...
And they didn't really see any of them through.
No. And so I was just kind of left like, well, that was depressing. Like, I just saw 20 minutes of kids getting raped and like...
I think it was also supposed to be like a happy ending. Because of that scene at the end where they're all sitting around a table like
singing
laughing.
Like they did when they were kids.
And it's like...
We haven't even mentioned Minnie Driver. All of a sudden, another thing that the 90s do. We need a woman. We need romance. No matter what.
Didn't need her at all. I liked her though
because I like Minnie Driver, especially because she had a great accent. Bringing it back to Brad, his fucking accent sucked.
It did suck.
He kept bringing it back and dropping it.
That's the only one he could really do.
He had like a keyword that was coffee.
Yeah.
And I was like, Brad, come on, I'm a better actress than you are. You know what I'm saying? Like, come on, act.
Spend a week in the Bronx, or spend a week in Hell's Kitchen, see how people talk.
That's what I'm saying. He just did this movie to do it because somebody told him he was going to get an Oscar for this, and he did it. But he like did not give it. He wasn't trying like he normally does.
He didn't. No, he didn't give his all for it.
Yes.
And you could really see it.
And it's so cool that we know that because we are the authorities now because we've now seen 14 movies starring him. Like we know that he didn't put an effort into this.
Yeah, we can tell. It's obvious, and I think this movie didn't age well because, I mean, it's totally, like, just spread out, like, chaotic, like theme-wise and tonally. It's like, it just doesn't, it's not all comes together. It doesn't come together well.
But here's a, oh, sorry.
Oh, it didn't do well because of that. But what it does have going for it is, I mean, no offense to Barry Levinson, but, like, no, I guess he did a good job directing. It's the edit that kind of got fucked. They should have slashed a bunch of stuff.
The edit is a nightmare. Also, there were a lot, for me at least, I noticed there were a lot of like film school things where like he was forcing that fucking revenge theme down our throats.
Oh my God.
With the Count of Monte Cristo and like the very first story we're told about Big Benny is like, this guy is a revenge guy. It's just like, wow, you went to film school and you learned how to tell a viewer theme. And it's like, bang, bang, banged into our head. I did make me want to read The Count of Monte Cristo, though.
I wrote that down. I should read The Count of Monte Cristo.
Yeah.
But this movie is shown in film schools, and it's shown in acting schools just for De Niro's subtlety and Hoffman's subtlety. And also Kevin Bacon's evil. Like,
oh, so fucking good.
I just hate his face. And this is a movie where he knows it, and he's so confident.
In his evil, I mean, he looks more like
he's
power
be sniveling,
to him.
But he's not. He's just this confident.
He's not
evilness.
Sniveling. He's just
a
disgusting
piece of shit.
Yeah. So like, there were a couple things I wrote down where it was like, so the young Brad Pitt, played by Brad Renfro, which we haven't even gotten to yet, and I'm gonna take the time now.
Okay, you take your time.
Bradley Renfro. The year this movie comes out, Chelsea, a young Chelsea Leigh Greenwood is 10 years old. She's subscribing to Tiger Beat. She's subscribing to Teen Vogue. She is obsessed with Brad Renfro. Like, he was, if you ask anyone in my family, he was the love of my life. One time on April Fool's Day, me and my family were in Catalina Island, and my sisters convinced me that he was on the island, and I spent 12 hours wandering the streets looking for Brad Renfro, thinking he was there. I dug a hole. This is how crazy I was at 10. I dug a hole in my backyard, hoping to dig my way to his house. Okay.
How?
I mean, I don't know what goes on in a mind.
You were 10?
Maybe 11, 9. I don't know. In that range.
11 is like rounding the corner to high school. Maybe. You thought you could still
dig?
I
must have been 8. He died shortly after this movie. No, he didn't. He died in 2005.
No, he was a kid in this movie.
Yeah, I was in love with him.
Uh-huh.
And I was glad to announce that I was no longer in love with him when I watched this movie. I was worried that I was going to be like, I'm attracted to him. But that being said,
did you feel like jealous when you saw that other adult fucking him?
Ooh, I'll take you there. Go in there. This is how it should always be. We should always record in person.
I know. Well, let's just fly every week.
Yeah. No, here's the thing, though. I have to say, my sexual attraction and love for him was replaced by respect, because I think he was a great actor. He did a good job. Didn't he? All the kids did a great job.
Yeah, I think they did. I mean, I thought it was a pretty good... Yeah,
their accents were better than fucking Brad Pitt's accent, that's for sure.
Kids are good actors. It's not hard.
They're not. Remember, I just worked with a lot of kids recently, and they were hellions.
Well, but the kids... If you have a good director, a kid can be a good actor, because kids play... Kids are acting all the time.
Yeah.
They play a lot, and acting is just playing,
and
but
they
have
imaginations. I did read a review that was like, these kids pulled straight out of Central Casting. And I was like, fuck you, I love them. They were my favorite part. I would have continued that like young coming of age story over what I ended up seeing. Not that that's even a valid thing to say, but I did enjoy the first half more than the second half. I even enjoyed the raping, but like I liked it when they were in school.
You enjoyed the raping?
Well, I didn't enjoy the raping, but I mean like I enjoyed watching the kids on screen, and I was like in it when I was enduring their pain with them, and I was enduring their joys with them. And then when they were grown up, I was like, I don't really care about you anymore. Also, I thought the lead actor, whatever.
Oh, I wrote down, what's his name? You mean the adult lead actor? Jason Patrick.
Yeah.
Jason Patrick. I thought he was, like, 90s handsome. You know what I mean? Like,
they're all 90s handsome.
No, but Jason Patrick specifically, he's got that, like thick black hair.
He does have a nice hair.
Thick eyebrows and, like, those deep-set eyes.
Yeah, see, what you're saying is... You want to bone him down?
No, I don't. No, I don't at all. I'm saying...
Oh, this is a negative thing.
I'm just saying he's very typical 90s. Like, yeah. I don't think he's ugly. I just don't, like...
No, he's not ugly. I'm saying he's not a good... He was just... It was like watching a dud.
Well, the bummer is that this... I read somewhere that this was supposed to be his breakout role.
Of course. Somebody said, do this movie for free. It'll be your breakout role.
Somebody made a lot of promises about this
movie. Yes. And they fucked everybody in the face. So, I don't know. I feel like that's the synopsis.
I mean, just to tie up that loose end, we never really explained Roger Ebert's reasoning behind that.
Oh, yeah, please bring it back.
So he said,
this was fascinating to me. I'm shocked
me
this
too.
Happened.
I read his whole review because
yeah,
I was
me
like,
too.
I don't want to hear what you have to
I
say.
I read somewhere Roger Ebert criticized this as a homophobic film. And I was like, it should have been a revenge fantasy. He said, this movie is a homophobic revenge fantasy. I wrote, what? ! This is fucking shocking.
Yeah. Well, so basically what his reasoning is that the whole movie was based on the idea that death and betraying everything you believe in, like religion, is worse than homosexual rape, which homosexual and sex and like being gay.
Yeah.
And, interesting idea that
it has nothing to do
with gay identity or gay sex, really. It's about child rape.
It's about child rape and child abuse. It has nothing to do with the fact that it's a man on a boy man. It's about grown-up people taking mm-hmm. advantage of non-grown-up people. And that's a theme throughout the whole thing. Like, the man their fathers are beating them. The kid ends up in the hospital. It's like the whole power structure of this whole movie. It's not just about anal sex. It's like,
no, it's not about gay sex. It's about child abuse.
The nerve of putting that in a review of a film is shocking to me.
Yeah, well, it was the 90s. It was a different time.
It was. That's true.
People.
That's true.
Gayness was a new concept to a lot of
people. People use the word faggot like it was flying around.
Oh, yeah. And AIDS was just becoming something that was finally seriously. Under control yeah. and taken seriously.
God, and people stopped time.
Being scared of gays around the 90s. I mean, it wasn't great. Like, it was, still wasn't yeah. great for the 90s, but it was, like, kind of, like, where the tide started to turn and people started to be like, okay, you know, we don't have to be scared of all gays. You're not going to get AIDS from touching, you know. So yeah. there was oh, a slight yeah. change in the tide, and I think Ebert thought that he was being defensive of the gays, but...
That's certainly the tone is, like...
Very social justice.
It's just so not... The way he's that we so think. He's so
fucking pompous about it.
I though. Don't like his reviews, although we did watch an interview with Siskel where he interviews Brad.
Mm-hmm. That was pretty good.
And I loved Siskel.
I do too, and I liked Brad in that interview. He was, you know, a charming young man.
I liked Brad in that interview. Did not like Brad in this movie, which didn't brings like me him in this to... Movie.
Let's so do basically, reviews.
That's it. Let me do the reviews. We're 57 minutes in. What are we going to do?
Yeah, let's do the reviews.
So, do you want to talk money first?
Yeah, okay, so basically this... Oh, I said $33 million. It has a $44 million budget, which... Okay, so it was... I'm not going to say low budget by any means, but, like, it's...
For this all-star power, it's pretty low.
It's kind of low.
Yeah, but maybe it was...
And for night. The... They did a lot of New York... External New York stuff.
But...
And that can't be that expensive.
No, in 1996...
95, yeah.
It was still Anything Goes.
Okay. The domestic gross was $53 million.
Good for them.
Pretty good. They made their money back.
Yeah, but they didn't get any Oscar noms.
Zero. Their total worldwide gross, including U.S., was $165.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Their opening weekend was $12 million.
That's pretty good.
It's okay. They were the number one movie in America for 2 weeks in a row.
Yeah.
So that's not bad. Okay. Granted, no other big movies came out at the same time or even close to the same time. Like, nothing else was out.
Right.
The closest thing that I recognized was First Wives Club and Swingers.
You don't own me.
First Wives Club was... It was
Swingers, oh my God.
Swingers had a terrible box office, I just discovered.
Yeah, but it's become a cult.
Oh, I love it
I was just talking about it last... Was I talking about it with you?
No, but I love that movie.
Oh my God.
It's like one of the best.
Oh my God, I have so much to tell you about that. That's not for this podcast. But yes, it's a great movie. So is First Wives Club. So is fucking... Independence Day.
Which oh yeah, Independence Day had came out like that was its like fifth week or so, or like seventh week or something.
Mission Impossible and Twister, which was also
Mission Impossible was on its like one of the later weeks. It yeah, was, it was been out. For
well, this
a while.
Came out in October, right?
October, yeah.
Yeah, so it was at the end of the year,
end of the summer.
It was the time it came out. The time where Oscar movies come out.
Yeah.
Oscar ooh, rate. We cracked a code. Okay, cool. Let's do ratings.
Okay.
This is intriguing.
What do you rate this movie?
No, I'm going to tell you what everybody else does. Then I'll rate
it.
Oh,
right. Yeah.
IMDb gave it a 7.6 out of 10.
Really? That's a high score.
Really high. Rotten Tomatoes, 73%.
It's easy to get distracted. Also high. Mm-hmm. It's easy to get distracted by the good performances from those three actors that we talked about.
Yeah, I mean...
And the fact that Brad Pitt is in it.
We'll talk about this when we talk about our ratings, but like it's a fine. I was thinking about what I was gonna say, and it's like this is a fine movie. It's fine. It's not bad. It's not great. Whatever. Rotten Tomatoes, 73%.
Okay.
Metacritic, which is accumulation of 18 reviews, is 49%.
That's a little more accurate.
Google users is 91, but again, it's one of those things. If you're looking for this movie, you're probably gonna rate it higher. And then Entertainment Weekly.
Oh, give it to me.
Solid C.
Finally, I agree for once.
I agree too. It's a solid C.
Solid C.
Uh-huh.
Which a C technically is like 70% when you think about in school.
Yeah, we do this when we talk about these things.
But like also it's like...
Yeah, it's like I can see my teacher's handwriting in a bright red marker that says 73%.
And it's a C. And yeah. But you know what? It's not good. A C is not good.
A C is less than good. I'm happy with a B.
Yeah, if I have a 70% chance.
I really, really love B movies. I do not really, really love C movies. But right. They're fine.
Right.
This movie is totally fine.
So
Which brings us to our ratings.
Yeah.
Overall, I would say that I think this movie is a, yeah, like a five and a half.
Five and a half?
Six. I'll give it a
overall?
Six. I'll give it a six.
I'll give it a six, too.
And I'll tell you why, because Robert De Niro was like actually a delight to watch. It was a delight. And Dustin Hoffman, too.
And Kevin Bacon. Like, they were all a delight to watch. It's just that it was so fucking long.
Yeah, too long. I did really like the... I was engaged the first half. They lost me at the second half. When they were, like, trying to, like, ooh and ah us with their sleuthing.
Yeah, they were really trying to ooh and ah us with sleuthing. And it could have been a very cool movie about... They could have made it interesting when... It's after they killed the guy that I realized, oh, it's about to get boring.
Yeah.
And it did. It, like, they killed him, and I just wanted so much more from that point on.
Totally.
There was something... It was too much and also not enough at the same time.
Yeah, I agree. Okay, so we're agreed there.
Yeah, we agree.
Brad Pitt's acting, not great. Like, four.
Yeah.
Just, like, not good. But he didn't want to do it. I guarantee you, if he were to walk in and we said, Brad, did you want to do the sleeper's role? He'd be like, no, I just like needed to do something to keep my name in the papers. Someone told me I was going to get an Oscar.
Someone told me I was going to get an Oscar. And also, it seemed familiar to him because when you think about the types of movies that he had done before, they were all like coming of age stories.
Yeah.
And
no,
like.
They weren't. There was not a single. There was only River Runs Through It.
I mean, and Legends of the Fall and.
Yeah, kind of.
I mean, not necessarily coming of age in that. I don't mean
it does fit the type of character he would play.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
100%.
It's like the type of movie he would do, where it's like a narration with a big swanky director and like a ballad of a movie.
Yeah.
Lately, he's been taking movies like this.
Well, no, we've just come off the heels of 12 Monkeys and 7.
Oh yeah, I forgot about that.
Like true, like thinkers.
Those are a little
crazy.
This one
could have been a thinker, and it wasn't. I'm bummed we don't have enough time to talk about the whole religious angle of this movie. There's a lot to be said for religion.
Yeah,
but... We don't have to, but like I like love talking about religion.
I do, too.
I'm not a religious person, and I never have been, and you...
I'm not a religious person now, but
you have been, and I just think religion in general is such a fun topic to talk about. Whatever.
It's a fun topic to talk about when you're mostly aligned with the person you're talking about it with.
Or I like debating people who are the exact opposite, but this is not a religious podcast. This is whatever. Whatever. Brad Pitt, what do you rate him? I rated him a four.
I mean, I'm going to give him like a 3.5 because he's
like
half. Oh,
now that you did
it,
I just felt bad, but like I feel like I want to give him a 3 even.
Yeah, okay.
So 3
I'll stick with 3.5 because he, you know, he did the thing, but it wasn't.
Do you do that every time?
No, but I should. I just started writing it down what the... our ratings are, because I want to be able to go back in the future and see what all of our ratings were without having to listen to the whole goddamn podcast.
Okay, so then finally Brad Pitt's hair.
Three also.
Fucking two.
Yeah.
I really didn't like it. I didn't care about the cut, but that color was a nightmare, and it's not his fault. Again, he didn't wear it well, but he didn't wear any of his clothes well either. It just was not... This was not Brad Pitt's movie.
No. It was a... He raised his rate, and he got that $6 million contract fee, and now here he is, like, flexing.
Yeah.
And good for him, you know? Pay your bills.
Yeah.
Be with Gwen.
Listen, he's killing it. He's doing great.
He's about to do... What's the next movie?
One I've never heard of, and it's called The Devil's Own.
Yeah, and I just looked it up, and it has Harrison Ford in it, who I love. I'm obsessed with Harrison Ford and Brad Pitt. And in the 90s, Harrison Ford was something special.
You know, oh my God. I mean, honestly, really, ultimate dreamboat. I cannot wait to cover this.
Especially because coming off of this movie, and now we're going to watch this movie, The Devil's Own, action crime drama, hour and 51 minutes, rated R, Brad Pitt, Harrison Ford. I'm horny. Let's do this. You know what I mean?
We're going to make this movie our bitch, and yes, I can't wait. Yeah. Just like What's His Did to the kids. Cares, oh, Kevin. No.
I thought
Costner.
We were done with the kid rape.
Okay.
Kevin Bacon.
Okay, so follow us on Instagram.
This is the Pitts Pod.
I'm like, it's killing me, but I'm trying to do it. I took a break this week, but I'll come back to doing regular stories. I am better than you are, and it sucks because someone's got to do it, and apparently it's got to be me.
Well, I mean,
it's fine. It's fine. It's
I
fine.
Need lessons. I'll do it.
But more importantly, we've never received a single email on our email.
Yeah, I mean, Google checks in occasionally to make sure we're good, but that's about it.
So this is a test. Testing, testing, testing. If you've made it this far, please send us an SOS.
Send us dick pics.
Selfies.
Questions. Send us questions about your life.
You know what I would love? I would love stories about people meeting Brad Pitt or the first movie they ever saw, the first wet dream they ever had. Like, give us some Brad Pitt stuff, you know? So anyway, this is a test. We really want you to email us, and it will be interesting to see if anyone actually makes it this far.
Yes, and our email is thisisthepittspod@gmail.com.
And we'll talk to you next week.
Goodbye.
Bye.